We remember Dr. Jane Goodall and her relationship with the Bramble Park Zoo. From SDPB, today is Friday, October 3rd. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, Jane Goodall changed how we see our place in the world, and she did it through simple curiosity, observation, and empathy. We'll bring you a conversation we had with her in 2022. Then we look ahead to a musical performance of Faith and Meaning. Augustana University in Sioux Falls offers spiritual contemplation for our times. Plus, the Black Hills Film Festival returns. This year, movies screen in Rapid City at the Journey Museum. We've got the preview from Executive Director Chris Van Ness. That's coming a bit later in the hour. We are broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment, and news is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. British primatologist and conservation icon Jane Goodall passed away this week. She's a world leader in education and conservation. Her youth organization, Roots and Shoots, operates in the northern Great Plains, including South Dakota. The program touched Bramble Park Zoo in Watertown. Well, in honor of the Bramble Park Zoo's 100th anniversary in 2022, I had the great privilege to welcome Dr. Jane Goodall to In the Moment. She discussed her life's mission, fostering respect and compassion for animals around the world, and creating a better home for all of Earth's inhabitants. To remember Dr. Goodall, we are bringing you that conversation today. We are delighted to welcome Dr. Jane to In the Moment. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me onto your program. Thank you.
Let's talk about the power of an accredited zoo and the Roots and Shoots program to help kids step into seeing the world in new ways.
Well, you know, the accredited zoos, first of all, they're good for the animals that they exhibit, but it also depends on who is actually running the zoo as to how this affects and impacts the children. So I've known Dan Miller for many years now. It was Dan Miller who introduced our Roots and Shoots program into the zoo and designed all these amazing programs to help young people, particularly disadvantaged young people, particularly young people from Native American communities, to realize that each and every one of us does make a difference every day. And it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, nevertheless, your actions make a difference every day. And it was Dan Miller who brought that ethic into the zoo community and designed programs that would help young people understand how they related to the natural world, understand personalities, the animals in the zoo, that they weren't just animals, they were individuals living in that zoo environment.
I remember the first day I realized that the birds at my bird feeder were specific birds. Like it was a bird that came back again and again versus just finches. And that was an awakening for me. Do children have similar awakenings where they suddenly realize it's not just, as you said, an animal in a zoo, it is an individual?
I suspect children are born with that knowledge, but that so often their parents, their family, their school, their society pushes it aside because it's much more convenient for many people to think of animals just as commodities for us to use as we wish. And if you start thinking of individual animals, for example, in factory farms, individual animals being rounded up and treated horribly, individual animals, you know, all the things we do to them in medical research, it's not convenient, is it, to think that each one is an individual with a personality, able to feel fear, pain, and contentment. So, you know, the zoo offers a wonderful opportunity because in a good zoo, and Bramble Park Zoo is accredited, that means the animals have as good a life as they can have in captivity. And sometimes That's better than in the wild where they're persecuted and hunted and where their habitat is destroyed. So, you know, growing roots and shoots and young people's empathy with animals and the natural world and each other, it's really the Bramble Park Zoo has created a wonderful atmosphere for this ethic to grow and expand and really impact young people for the rest of their lives.
You have been to South Dakota, and I want to go back to something you said about the each other part, because a lot of your work has been with human beings who live with animals in wild spaces or adjacent to those wild spaces. Many of the kids in a South Dakota Roots and Shoots program are going to be farm kids, are going to be ranch kids, and are asking those questions about the work of their family, the future of an operation. They see the financial hardship. This has been very important to your work too, to think about the people who have to survive as well as the environment and the animals. Will you talk about that, please?
Yeah, because it's a very interesting and difficult topic. And it's one that, you know, you come up against, because if you truly care about animals and people, as I do, then there are situations where people are living and they're living, their ability to provide for their children depends on what amounts to cruelty to animals. So in that situation, in a farming community, for example, factory farming is out. There's no way that that can be justified, for either from the point of view of the animals, the environment, or the consumer. And I talk for hours about that, won't. But on the other hand, if you're ranching animals and your livelihood depends on selling them for food, then the important thing is, while that animal is alive, treat the animal with respect. Try, like the indigenous people, if you kill an animal, to acknowledge that the animal is being sacrificed for you, to respect the animal and to value every single piece, like our ancestors did. I mean, you slaughtered a pig, and the pig had been, you know, the family had all their money together to feed the pig so the pig could feed them and make them some money. But nothing was wasted. No single piece of that pig was wasted. And when you think of how people waste food today, so they disrespect the animals. They don't care two hoots about their lives and their suffering. They don't want to think of. And they have a huge steak on their plate. They toss half of it away. And there are starving people as well as the cruelty to the animal. So we just got to change the way we deal with these. It's not easy, but the young people today, I'm telling you, they get it. They're understanding. They're developing compassion for animals, people. They're beginning to understand the complex interrelationship of all these different aspects. And as I say, not easy, but there are things we need to think of.
Do you find hope in this generation like you have in the past? Do you continue to have hope? And do you see children that have hope?
Well, I think of hope as taking action. Hope isn't passive. And I think of it, like, imagine we're at the mouth of a long, dark tunnel. Right at the end of that long, dark tunnel is a little star shining. But we don't just sit at the mouth of the tunnel and expect that that star will somehow come to us. No, we have to roll up our sleeves and get out there. We have to crawl under, climb over, work our way around all the obstacles between us and the star. Things like climate change, loss of biodiversity, poverty, cruelty, all the rest. And gather people as we go, people who can deal with all the different aspects, the different problems, and gather more and more people. And then if we all work together and we don't give up hope, and we realize we have tools available that we can make change, then we'll reach the star. And that's the message of children today, and children are getting it. And that's why the Jane Goodall Institute Roots and Shoots program has been developed in the Bramble Park Zoo, thanks to Dan Miller. You know, it's helping young people understand that what they do does make a difference, makes a difference every day. And they are empowered. That's the key. They get to choose projects to help people, to help animals, to help environment, projects they care about. And when you put all this together and the children are empowered and they see they've made a difference, that gives them hope. And then they realize, well, our Roots and Shoots program is in 65 countries around the world. All of the young people are tackling these. Then you start being able to think problems of the planet a different way with hope. Yes, together we can do it. We do know how to do it. We have the will to do it. Young people can, we will say.
Is compassion hard? Is it brave? How do you see compassion?
I think compassion is probably born into all of us. And it's education and your surroundings and where you are and how your family behaves that either kind of grinds it out of you as a child or builds it up. And as certainly in the scientific world, compassion was something that you didn't. You couldn't talk about love. You couldn't talk about it. You just had to treat animals as objects. And in the same way, you had to treat people, poor people, downtrodden people. It doesn't matter about them as individuals. They're just the poor. Or they're just, you know, the disadvantaged. They're individuals. They matter. Talk to them. Bring them in. Empower them. And then that will give them hope. And collectively, more and more people around the world. If you don't have hope, fall into apathy. If we all fall into apathy, we're doomed. Climate change is real. Biodiversity is real. Pandemic, we brought on ourselves by disrespecting animals, by trafficking them around the world, selling them in wildlife meat market, putting them into these factory farms, creating conditions where a virus can jump from an animal to a person, where it may create a new zoonotic disease like COVID-19. So we're being hit by our disrespect of animals and the environment. Kids are getting it. Roots and Shoots young people beginning to understand. So my big hope for the future is all these young people are growing into the decision makers of the future. Some of them already are because we began in 1991. And they don't stand in because they were empowered to take action for things that cared.
In Roots and Shoots, like the program in Watertown at the Bramble Park Zoo, do you see, what's your message for parents who will be challenged by their children coming home and saying, I want to do something new, or I want to take this action, and that action might be different or controversial in a family. Talk to the parents for a minute about that process.
Well, the best I can do with that is to talk about my mother. No, I grew up in World War II, and when I was born loving animals. When I was 1.5 years old, Mum came into my room at night, I don't remember this, and she found I'd taken all these earthworms and earth into my bed. And, you know, most mothers, oh, take these dirty things out, how dare you? She just said, Jane, I think you were looking at them with such intentness. I think you were wondering, perhaps, how do they walk without legs? And she very quietly said, we need to take them back because they need the earth, they might die. And it was the same through my childhood. She supported this love of animals. She got me books about animals. When I wanted to go to Africa when I was 10 to live with wild animals and write books about them, everybody laughed. How will you do that? You don't have money. Africa's far away. It's a dangerous place. And you're just a girl. I remember, we're going back 80 years now. My mother said, do you really want to do something like this? then you're going to have to work really hard, take advantage of every opportunity. If you don't give up, hopefully you find a way. I did. But, you know, it's important for parents to support. I have a little boy who says, I am going to be an engine driver. Well, you know he probably won't, and that will die away. But while he wants to be an engine driver, support him. Make him feel, hey, that's great. So glad you thought of something. And then when he changes his mind and decides he wants to go to college and do some kind of degree in some kind of, you know, whatever they want to do now, it's all of this IT stuff. Support him then too. Don't make him feel he made a bad mistake. Don't make her feel that she was stupid when she was young and now she's come to her senses. No, we go through different stages, and the support of a parent, or sometimes there isn't a parent, an older brother, sister, cousin, teacher, support is absolutely crucial for a child. Make them feel that they have some control over their lives. They'll be a better person.
When you came to South Dakota for the Beau Forum at Augustana University, I stood in line with my daughter, and you bring the children to the front of the line, and her name is Jane, and so she got to meet you, and it has been one of our family stories forever with how much you can change a child's life with in a second. Do children change your life too, as you meet them around the world? Are they having the same impact on you that you can have through your presence with them?
What children do for me, they support everything I believe. And so they give me hope. They empower me to carry on with what I'm doing, sometimes in the face of what seems impossible odds. If you look at the world today, I mean, pretty bad mess, isn't it? But the children, they are so open-minded. They get involved in something, and you empower them to follow their dream. And they won't give up. They're determined, they're passionate. And so it's that passion, that determination, and their eventual success that keep me going. And, you know, my greatest hope for the future is the young people. How old is your Jane now?
21 now, in college, yes.
Well, give her my love, and if she wants to make contact with me, you know how to do it through my organization. I'm very happy to communicate with her in an email.
Thank you very much. She's a filmmaker now, and I think that is another way to change the world. Yeah. Thank you.
Definitely. Very important way to change the world.
We are going to put some links up on our website to the Bramble Park Zoo as they celebrate their 100th year here in Watertown, South Dakota, and to the Dr. Jane Roots and Shoots program, which is also a part of the Bramble Park Zoo's offerings. And they have summer programming and all kinds of things happening. So thank you, Dr. Jane Goodall, for once again making time for the people of South Dakota. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And to all of you in South Dakota, sending you my love, my blessings, and hang in there. And together we can, and together we will change the world.
Dr. Jane Goodall joined In the Moment in May of 2022. She passed away on Wednesday this week. More In the Moment is after the break. You're on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The Augustana Choir and the Augustana Bach Collegium join forces for their first concert of the season. It's called Have Ye Not Known, Watch and Pray. The evening of sacred choral music takes place on Sunday, October 5th. That's at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Sioux Falls. Dr. David Chin, conductor of the Augustana Bach Collegium, and Dr. Russell Svenningson, director of vocal studies and conductor of the Augustana Choir, join me to preview the concert. it seems early for performance. So let's talk a little bit about the the pathway for students, you know, incoming freshmen and the upperclassmen who are coming back. Mm-hmm. You get started right away. Let's talk about the program first, and then we'll talk about the upcoming performances.
Sure, yeah. We hold auditions for returning students in the spring. So the choirs are partially rostered then. And then the freshmen, the incoming class, they audition for us the weekend before classes begin. And classes start typically on Wednesday, as they did this year, and rehearsals started right away that day as well, the Wednesday before Labor Day. We have in the last year was really sort of our first year with a new model in terms of the tempo of performances, but we've intentionally kind of sped things up a little bit, increased the speed of the pedagogy and the teaching, operating sort of in the whole school of music in a more professional model. And so last year we actually had our first concert on the 28th of September.
This year, October 5th.
So that feels, you know, it does feel soon. Every choir is a little bit different. You know, every incoming class is a little bit different, but the students that are in the Augie Choir and the Collegium are very bright. They're very motivated. You know, the expectations for them are high, but they always seem to rise to the occasion, you know.
And that helps prepare them for professional arts careers.
Some of them, certainly. But our intention is that, you know, because most of our choirs are rostered with non-music majors at a liberal arts institution like Augie, our intention is to prepare them for a lifetime of music in whatever capacity they desire. You know, they're in the American society, there's been a proliferation of semi-professional and really excellent volunteer choirs all over the United States in the last 10, 15 years or so. And so like we tell them all the time, whether you want to sing in a church choir or to sing in a community group, or even if you want to sing in one of the semi-professional, professional choir, many groups that are out there, you can do that. Even if it's just that when it's somebody's birthday in your office and it's time to sing happy birthday and have cake, you don't have to feel like, I don't sing, that sort of a thing, you know?
So is that a good thing to have music be more part of our lives? But then I'm also wondering if it's harder to make money if you want your profession to be in music. Mm-hmm. David, how do you see the sort of, you know, expectation that, well, everybody can sing, so therefore it's a volunteer opportunity versus the students are coming and saying, I want to be in this profession as a composer, as a performer, as a musician.
Well, this has been a constant problem, isn't it, throughout the history, when we're constantly asking the question, should we pay musicians and how much should we pay them, especially for singers, because everyone sings. But what we can see is in today's world, there are so many, there are more and more professional chamber ensemble, chamber choir, and this not only in the United States, but also in European countries.
Okay.
Also in Asia, slowly we are catching up. So it is more possible for an institution to hire a smaller group of choir, smaller group of singers, very professional ones, instead of hiring a 200 people symphonic choir.
Okay.
You know, I mean, the only choir that I know of that pays partially to some of their singers would be the Chicago Symphony Chorus. But other than that, I mean, if you look at, you know, the model now, all these chamber choirs around the world, they are small. So with Augustana Bach Collegium, one of the aims that we are trying to achieve is to train these students to learn the music as quickly as possible and how to make this music into the best possible sound they can in the shortest amount of time, also with their colleagues. So not only learning how to sing as a soloist, but also how to listen, how to work with other people. Mm-hmm. And I think this has been very valuable for Augustana Bach Collegium. And I'm so proud of these students because, and we were just talking in the car, this choir was founded a little bit more than 2 years ago. And this was the time when all these students came in Many of them have never sung Bach before in their entire lives. And suddenly now they're being thrown at 2 cantatas per semester, or motets. And thankfully, last April, when I spoke with you last time, we were talking about Bach's St. John Passion. I mean, this is a 2-hour masterpiece by Johann Sebastian Bach, one of the 3 or 4 larger works that he has composed. And they really surprised me and, you know, went above and beyond. And it was a little bit rough in the beginning, but they performed so well in April. So now we came back. We have some new freshmen also in our group this year, but these returning students, they were so on fire. And after singing St. John Passion, this cantata, these short cantatas, which to many people, very difficult things to achieve. Now they can sing it with ease already in the second week of classes. They could already perform this. So this week, they surprised me on Monday. They memorized the opening chorus, which is the most difficult thing. Oh, they could sing from memory. So I'm very happy and I'm very proud to be able to be here in Sioux Falls, in Augustana, and to work with these brilliant students.
Yeah. I would do that for you too. They want to show up for you to surprise you with something wonderful. Were I capable of such a thing, I would. And so I was in the audience in April for that performance, and it just deeply, deeply moved me. So talk a little bit about what performances like this mean for the community, and then we'll get into the actual program. But we talked a little bit about what it means for the students and for the program at Augustana. It means so much to a community to have access to these performances as
it
well.
Does. Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, something, a towering masterpiece like the St. John Passion is not something that you get to hear very often. You know, the South Dakota Symphony did it some years ago, but and it's very possibly the case that people came to hear the piece not really knowing what to expect.
Right.
And or really maybe anything about the piece, maybe having heard a little bit, but that's it. And then to see the students from Augustana performing it, you know, not simply getting through it, but actually bringing the piece to life. You know, I think that element of watching something marvelous happen right in front of you is very impactful for people, and I think everybody recognizes it, musicians and non-musicians alike. I also think, you know, with regard to Augustana's grounding in the Christian faith, and that piece of music being so thoroughly a representative of what it is we believe and what we proclaim, to see that mission brought to life in front of you and to hear it with your own ears, you know, it deepens the impact. It goes beyond the musical achievement. It makes it kind of a spiritual achievement as well. And to watch these students, I will admit, when we started talking about it, I thought, you know, I trust David and I trust my colleagues at the School of Music. And I did have thoughts in my head, sort of thinking, how are we ever, will we be able to pull this off? And I love it when as a teacher and a musician, when I'm wrong, you know, and they really dug into it and not only performed beautifully, but they really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You mentioned about community. And one thing that I like a lot about Sioux Falls since arriving here is, you know, I was in upstate New York for about 7-8 years or so. And then I was in other places, but the Midwestern choral singing culture is really different. It's a long tradition. And this is a very special thing. I think you just walk on the street and you ask people, oh, did you sing in a choir when you were in high school or something, when you were in college or university? Most likely they have, or maybe they have met their spouses there in a choir. And this is a very special thing. And I think one thing that we are now so into technology, into AI, into the meta world, one thing that you can never replace is in-person experience. Yes, you could have very high quality recording equipment, which we have at Augustana, and you can have all these beautiful, wonderful speakers that is so real. But nothing can replace when the sound comes out from a fellow human being and the sound vibrating in the air and from heart to heart. This you cannot replace mm-hmm. with anything, not recording or anything. Mm-hmm. So I think it's so important that we keep this live performance alive, you know, to have this. And this is very important.
Yeah. My one regret that night was I didn't sit closer. Mm-hmm. So that's my advice to anyone going to the future performance. No, I had a cough. I had a cold. So I was like, well, you know, I better hang back so I don't disrupt the performance. Or if I have to leave, I was being considerate. But I kind of wish I had just taken the chance and sat closer and then trusted that it would be okay. Because I'm quite sure I didn't think about coughing the entire time once the performance started. What's coming up for this program now? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, on the 5th at Our Savior's Sunday night, it's a joint effort between the Collegium and the Augustana Choir. Mm-hmm. The Augustana Choir will be presenting six pieces that evening, a little bit of everything, from the music of Kenneth Jennings to Moses Hogan, mm-hmm. Charles Villiers Stanford, and a few other pieces. The theme of our part of the concert is Have You Not Known? And this comes from Scripture. And I was explaining to the students the other day, the end of the Jennings motet, the last words are, Have You Not Known? Have You Not Heard? And this is all about understanding the mystery of faith and the gift of grace. And so the year is structured, our season is structured in the Augustana Choir in such a way that we are asking and answering questions about our faith through the music. And the final mm-hmm. program for the year for the Augustana Choir in the spring will be themed Have You Not Heard? So we're kind of bookending the year. So there'll be some recognizable music in our portion. There's going to be some... As the kids would say, some real choral bangers on there.
All bangers, no skips.
That's baby. Right. Perfect.
What is a motet?
Yes. It's a piece for choir. Excuse me, either a cappella or accompanied, and can have. Generally, a motet has a sacred text.
Okay.
But it can also be secular as well. But there's a little bit of everything from English choral music to American spirituals, and the students have really dug in. They're really enjoying themselves, and the music is really starting to come alive. I'm excited. And so, in a resonant space like Our Savior's, too, we'll be singing from the balcony.
Okay.
High on the center axis of the church. You know, that's why the organ is there. That's really how you want to
like
hear
the sound of the angels coming down from heaven.
There you go. Exactly.
It will drape over the
crowd.
There
you go. Brilliant. Right.
So help me understand how you say, you know, you're talking about your faith while you're learning the music. Mm-hmm. What do you mean exactly? Is that happen with intention from mm-hmm. you as a professor, as a choral director, or is that something that's just sort of natural because you're singing it all the time and therefore there's a process involved? Mm-hmm. Or is it part of your instruction?
It's part of the rehearsal, and it is intentional, absolutely. You know, the Augustana Choir has a long history of delivering what has been called for many years a sermon and song. Mm. And so the music is selected in such a way as to take a walk through our faith, and it is taught. We work in rehearsal talking about those things. Not just me talking, you know, sort of at the students, but they participate as well. Mm. It's really important that everyone is able to understand the music in a way that's and the text in a way that's very meaningful and personal, you know, because that comes across in their performance. This is, as David was saying, you know, there's nothing like live performance.
Yeah.
There's a lot of kinds of communication going on at that moment, because he's exactly right when he says that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different forms of communication happening on different levels, and if the students are intentionally engaged and have been through the process, they will sing convincingly. And that's sort of my highest compliment for any choir, if they sing convincingly. And then, you know, you just never know who you're singing for and how they might receive the music. So we take all of that very seriously.
Yeah.
I always say to students, you have to first let the words and the music move you before you can move the audience. Mm-hmm. And it's really not our job to move the audience. You know, it's our job to do our best, and then they get whatever, you know. And for Collegium, this program we are doing, BWV 70, Cantata 70, Wachet, Betet, Betet, Wachet, which means watch, pray, pray, and watch. The music starts with this incredible trumpet fanfare. Mm. And what is this role of the trumpet? Is to wake people up. Wake up, you know, watch, watch, and then pray. And then it says, be ready, you know. And then suddenly in the second movement, it goes into this very dramatic recitative where the earth is shaking. And then you still hear this trumpet and the baritone comes out and then make this declamation and say, repent, you sinners, you know, the end time is near, da, 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 da. You know, and then you have different soloists singing around this theme. That's the first half. But then the second half of the cantata is like a New Testament, you know, where the gospel comes, when it says, well, we have pain in this world. We have so much suffering in this world. We are being tempted in this world, but we have salvation in heaven. The heaven is waiting for us. And I have been thinking about this for a while now. I mean, you look at this music from Bach's time or even before his time. They always talk about how they want to get away from this world and they are looking forward to heaven. Mm-hmm. Why? Because in their time, the world was really a sad and horrible place. People are dying every day. People are losing their loved ones every day. They have nothing but only looking forward to heaven. And I say today, our world, sometimes we eat so much good food. We enjoy so many wonderful things in this world. It's so much harder for us today to imagine what heaven is like compared to the people at the time. And, you know, we all share the same feelings, love, longing, fear, hope, and these things like this. But when it comes to heaven, really, I think the people during Bach's time might feel much closer. However, you and I know we have struggles in this world. You know, we talk about having limbos in life. We talk about uncertainties in life. When we are going through all these troubles and problems and uncertainties, you know, constantly in our life, even if you have a family, you have a stable job, you have a stable home and all this, you never know what is going to happen next. And, you know, my dad passed away unexpectedly in May, immediately, weeks after the St. John Passion.
I'm sorry.
And you know, it gets me think about all these things. Like, you know, there are uncertainties in life. We cannot plan our life. But what we can do is, the only thing we can do really is to surrender and do our very best and always remember that the greatest hope is not of this world.
Mm-hmm. How can, and especially in the music of Bach, as you've studied it and studied what he put into his work, because you know it very intimately, how can that music or that song be a container for our human suffering?
Oh, always. I mean, every single cantata is taking us from darkness to light, from fear to faith to confidence, from loss to hope. And this cantata that we are performing, you know, yeah, it's like a sermon, watch and pray and all this, but it's talking about we are all struggling in this world. But it ends, in the end, this chorale, which the audience also has an opportunity to sing with us, it ends in heaven. You know, the last solo piece, kind of the baritone, kind of the same baritone, the same bass singer who is like scolding us, you have to repent. In the end, he sings this ascending scale and takes us to heaven. And then the last chorale, the congregational chorale, which audience will sing together with us in English. Usually Bach would double the chorale. When we say double means the first violin plays the soprano part, the second violin plays the alto part, and the viola plays the tenor part like this. But this chorale is different. The strings, they don't double the singers, but they play higher than the singers. It's almost like the singers are the saints, and then this string sound that is way high above them, it's like halo. It's take like we are angels in heaven. And I think, you know, these cantatas of Bach, he wrote this not, he wasn't sitting in a comfortable living room with fireplace, with hot chocolate, and having very comfortable clothing and very silent sound and beautiful view of the nature and write this. He was in the midst of troubles every day with his employers, with his students, with his family. I mean, he had 20 kids, you know, and all these things. So this is what I admire about him. Bach is not writing music for us to just, no, look, this is faith, you should sing it. But he really wrote his life into his music. And how we are performing his music now, we are applying our life in his music and bring this music back up, back out to life. Yeah. Even in German, even for a 21st century audience, I think you can find so much consolation, so much comfort, and so much hope in experiencing Bach's music, whether you are singing, playing, or you are in the audience listening. Yeah. So,
Thank you for that. Russ, likewise, some of the American composers or other composers in your part of the program, were they also using song and music as a container for some pretty intense human suffering? Or are these pieces coming from places of delight and joy? Characterize that for us.
Yeah, it's a little of both, you know. The Stanford Motet will sing Beati Quorum Via, Blessed Are They Who Walk in the Law of the Lord. You know, it has a rather ethereal quality to it. It is very, it is that, sort of a realization of the comfort of that faith can provide. Mm-hmm. There are other pieces we're doing. Moses Hogan, My Soul is Anchored in the Lord. And it sounds like a strong sort of statement of faith, and it is. But it's also, I think the music acknowledges the turbulence that kind of a decision creates daily, you know. To make that decision is not a one-time thing. You make that decision every day, many times a day sometimes, and to trust and to have faith or to embody grace to another person. And I think the music we're performing perfectly sort of represents all those different facets, you know, that it's complicated and it can be messy sometimes.
That's Dr. David Chin, conductor of the Augustana Bach Collegium, and Dr. Russell Svenningsen, director of vocal studies and conductor of the Augustana Choir. You can hear the choir and collegium this Sunday, October 5th. It's at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Sioux Falls. After the break, we switch from music to film. Chris Van Ness joins me to preview the Black Hills Film Festival. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Today marks the beginning of 3 days of live film screenings at the Journey Museum in Rapid City. Yes, the Black Hills Film Festival kicks off today. This, by the way, is the 16th annual festival. We're going to get a special preview. Chris Van Ness is the festival's executive director. She joined me from SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. Chris Van Ness, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here again, Lori.
All right, 16 years of
exactly.
All right, tell us. Wow, time flies, right?
It does. 16th annual Black Hills Film Festival.
I was just out in the hills and saw some of the promotional material for this. Tell people who haven't connected with the Black Hills Film Festival a little bit about the history and what you're trying to accomplish with the program.
Well, we started in 2009. We formed the organization, and every year since then, we've been having our annual festival, and we feature films by independent filmmakers, and they're very passionate people that have projects that affect us and our lives and tell great stories. And so we've been trying to present great stories. A lot of them are South Dakota stories. That's what we feature, and a lot of Native American stories.
Yeah, and I think I ask you this every year, and every year the answer seems to expand on itself, which is what is our film industry like right now? How is the network working? What kinds of movies are we making? What are some of the trends that you're seeing?
Well, it's a little bit tougher now for filmmakers because they have to do all their own fundraising. And, of course, a lot of the grants have dried up. Mm. And so they depend on networking with each other and trying to get help wherever they can. And that's one of the things we try to feature in our festival is we invite all the filmmakers to come, and we have networking opportunities. Yeah. And they can get together and kind of help each other out.
Yeah. Tell me about selecting the films to be screened.
We start right after the festival each year with the open entries for films. And filmmakers will submit their films. We have a panel of about 8 judges that watch every film that comes in. And they rate them in production quality and all of acting, about 10 different criteria.
Yeah.
And then rank that up. Storytelling is probably the biggest thing that we look at. They might be a little less... have a few less points in production, but if they have a great story and it's compelling, we will certainly rank that higher. And then our judges just score them, and whatever floats to the top, and however much time we have to play them,
yeah.
we cut that off and say these are our selections for this year.
Yeah. All right. And so people have 3 days of screenings at the Journey Museum, and tell me a little bit about the audience experience.
Well, this is our first year of doing everything at the Journey Museum, so it'll be exclusively there. People won't have to travel around, and we have 20 films there. Friday night, we open with a session of 3 films and ending with Green and Gold, which is a great film featuring local Rapid City actress Madison Lawler.
Okay.
And so that'll be a fun time. Madison will be here and be able to... She just returned from a premiere of her latest film, and that went really well, too. So it'll be fun to talk to her about how things are going. Then all day Saturday, we've got a whole 3 sections of films. One of them is completely South Dakota films. That'll be fun. And then we end Saturday night from 7 to 10 with 3 really great films, and ending with our best feature narrative film, Paper Bag Plan. So that'll be a great day on Saturday.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention that Saturday morning we start out with our free panel discussions at 10 o'clock. First one is on how to make films in South Dakota. It's free. It's open to the public. Anybody who wants to come can come. It's in the theater at the Journey. Mm-hmm. The second session for panels from 11 to 12 is empathy through films, and that'll be a really good discussion. Both discussions are hosted by Alicia Garcia from the KOTA News anchor, and those 2 sessions will be... like I said, free to everyone. I'm sure a lot of people are interested in how that whole filmmaking works.
You mentioned trouble with funding or grants, you know, some of the struggles that people have, especially when grant funding dries up or is on pause. What do you see, Chris, is the power of film, especially locally developed film, in helping us navigate our times? Because some of these are, you know, fiction, you know, there are movies, there's documentaries, there could be something that's funny or romantic or tense, but what do you think these films contribute to our understanding of the way we are living in the world right now?
These filmmakers that we have are very passionate about their projects, and I think they are telling stories that are relevant and that are happening to us today, and so we can get involved with their stories and we can learn about each other. And I think it helps us all get together and work together as a community to navigate these new challenges that we're having.
Yeah.
And that's part of the whole empathy panel discussion is, you know, how do you let other people know what you're feeling, what your neighbors are feeling, and start working together to become more of a community?
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about the Native American film session.
On Sunday, all day from 1 o'clock till 6 in the evening, we will have a complete screening of Native American films. Mm-hmm. And we have 2 award winners in those 2 sessions. And we'll also be having the Canadian consulate from Minneapolis coming to introduce 2 Canadian Native American films in our first session.
That was Chris Van Ess, Executive Director of the Black Hills Film Festival. The festival runs from today through Sunday, October 5th. It's at the Journey Museum in Rapid City. And that is our show for today. We hope that it served you from all of us here at SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.